Hello and welcome to Connecting to Host, where we're going to be talking about Borderlands 2, because we've gone back in time about 4 years for some reason. Oh, 5 years, it came out in 2012. So, loot, shoot and level up. Borderlands 2 is an online cooperative FPS RPG where you play as 1-4 Vault Hunters, facing off against a massive new world of creatures, psychos and the evil mastermind, Handsome Jack. It was originally released in 2012 and is currently available on Steam for a price of around €30 or €45 with DLC, which seems ridiculously high now I think about it because it's 5 years old. But it's always on Steam sale, so it's pretty easy to pick up. You can also get it on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One as part of the Handsome Collection, which is essentially like a Game of the Year edition for about £40. As I said, it's nearly always on sale, so check it out on the Humble Store or wait for the next Steam sale.
Yeah, the Handsome Collection comes with other games too, right? Like the pre-sequel.
Oh, yeah, it does, yeah.
On the PS4 or Xbox One.
That seems a crazy price difference then.
Yeah.
Because maybe you can get that on Steam as well. I don't know.
But like you say, it's always on sale.
I think you can also get it on Xbox 360, or I might be completely making that up. Is it a 360?
No, it was
game?
Originally on 360, yeah.
That's true. It's backwards compatible on Xbox One, so if you have the original disc, you can maybe buy the disc and put it in, and that'll work, and you just automatically get the downloaded copy.
If you want to slum it.
Worth trying. Yeah. So, what are we playing on and what characters are we using? We originally played through the game and all of the DLC on the Xbox One, but we have recently gone back to it only for an hour, I think about an hour and 20 minutes or something, on our gaming PCs, and it looks a lot better at 100 FPS at 4K, I can tell you, rather than 22 FPS or whatever it is on the Xbox.
It ran pretty smooth actually on the Xbox because it was the old game ported, I guess, so.
Yeah, and the cartoon graphics kind of, it's a lot easier to render. It's not like it's trying to be, you know, Titanfall or Call of Duty or something realistically detailed. I think the cartoon aesthetic makes it slightly easier to render. But tell us about the game, John. Tell us.
Most certainly, sir. So, I mean, if anyone hasn't heard of Borderlands, this is going to be unlikely, but just in case you haven't, it's a kind of fairly standard FPS in terms of gameplay, but with a massive inventory of guns, different types of grenades you can throw, relics and things you can pick up to add to your character, and shields. But it is an open world game, so that sets it apart from most FPSs, with quest markers, loads of different areas you can visit, about 20 I think in total, and all have different levels, so you can go anywhere, but you'll get your ass handed to you. Lots of chests, lots and lots and lots of loot. And to help you getting around, you fairly early on unlock a vehicle station. So you can spawn a vehicle and you can kind of either go for a machine gun or a rocket launcher on it and just blast around the wastelands in your vehicle, shooting things and getting to quest markers quicker and quicker. Overall style, pretty tongue-in-cheek, I guess, in delivery of characters and plot. And like you said before, the visuals are fairly a bit cartoony or cel-shaded, not fully. It's not like watching an anime, but it's everything's got big black borders, so it's somewhere in the middle. But because of that, I think it actually still looks pretty good, even at 5 years old. You don't feel like it's crappy old textures or anything, because most of them are meant to be quite colourful and bright. So
yeah, it's holds up well. A gritty feel to it, like the cel shading. As you say, it's not like an anime. It's much more kind of like, I'm trying to think of, kind of like something like Sin City, or something like that,
yeah.
Where it's not black and white, obviously, but it's that kind of, you know, heavy artistic cel shading with lots of dirt all over it. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's nice. It's definitely different to other games, so it stands out for that.
So there's lots of different characters that you can play as. I mean, basically, you're going to talk about the plot in a minute, I guess. But the plot starts, it carries on pretty much from the previous game, Borderlands 1, which I hadn't played when I played this game. So I had no idea about any of the setting, plot, nothing. And you're all on a bus and you get to choose your character from. I think there's four to start with in the
base game. Core game. Yeah.
And then there's two more in the DLC later on. So you've got Salvador the Gunzerker, who has a berserk mode where he can dual wield guns, which is pretty awesome. There was Zero the Assassin, which is who I played as, I think. The holographic decoy. And that was great because you could just basically drop a holographic version of you, and then enemies would attack that, and then you just sort of run around and shoot things. Was good with the sniper rifle and stuff, which I generally prefer. There was Maya the Siren, which is what I believe you played as.
Certainly was, yeah, with the slightly magical powers.
Yep, and you could do suspend enemies, which was great because you could literally just pick people up and they would just hover in the air for a little bit, so you could just shoot them. And then did it have like some sort of quantum break thing where like if you shot loads of bullets at it, they'd all appear at once the suspension was over, or am I completely imagining that?
Pretty sure you're imagining that. They would go up in the air and your shots would do more damage on them, so you get kind of buff damage.
That was pretty. And it was much easier to headshot them for me because if you suspended them, they were just there, and so you could just go bang, 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 and just get multiple headshots in a row, and great for boss fights. And then there was Axton the Commando, which we never used, who can drop turrets, who's a bit more of an engineer type.
I used him in one of my run-throughs. He's pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't think
with you, but I played it a bit before we played it for like 5 or 10 hours, and I played as him, and you could just drop the turret. Nice to have a sidekick, especially if you're not playing co-op, so.
I was just thinking when we played it through again, I think I chose maybe one of the... Maybe it was the Gunzerker. I can't remember.
I think I had the Gunzerker and you had the Mechromancer.
Okay. Gage the Mechromancer. Oh, of course it was, yes, because she looks a bit like Tiny Tina. That's why I chose her. Yeah, yeah. So she can summon a mech companion. She's one of the DLC players. And then there's Grieg the Psycho. Who has a throwable axe, and the psychos are basically the bad guys of the game, or one of the bad guys, I should say. So you can play as that side, sort of. There's some weird characters in this game.
Yeah, just there for fun, I guess. He was one of the DLCs near the end. So, but I really like the fact that the different characters had the leveling trees as well. So each one had three different trees of skills, right? And at level 5. You would unlock those trees of skills and you could pump your points into them. So like for my character, I got to level up my lifting ability or perhaps some more general combat skills, and you could add effects to your powers depending on which skills you bought in the tree. So, and they were meaty trees. I mean, I think the game caps at level 60 or something originally, and then you can get it higher with DLC, and every level you get another point to put in. So you got to gradually add these powers and abilities, which is cool.
Yeah, there was a nice, steady progression. And there's also were they called badass points? Or am I thinking
about that? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I'll let you talk about that.
So
I've just read down the list slightly and then just seen literally the next line after after says badass points.
So many things in this game. It's a huge game.
I literally typed a comment, golden keys, and that's there as well. So I'll just shut up. I'll let you get on with it.
Already thought of it, Mr. Benjamin. Don't you worry. But let's talk about the plot a little bit. So, I mean, the game is set 5 years after the first game, where a bunch of vault hunters landed on the planet Pandora, and they went hunting for some massive treasures in this sort of curious vault thing that you have to hunt down in the first one. But at the end of the first game, I'm going to kind of spoil this for you, Ben, if you haven't finished it yet, I'm afraid, but we're talking about the sequel. But you go into the vault and there's a massive monster inside, like the world-eating monster, and obviously you kill it. So then 5 years later, this is when this game starts, and what's really cool is that the original characters are still kicking around, right, in the world, and then but Handsome Jack has come to Pandora, and now he kind of rules the planet from his satellite, which is a massive H shape in the sky. So whenever you're walking around the world, you can just see this H-shaped satellite, which is where he's looking down, probably with lots of laser beams. But there is rumors of an even bigger, more prosperous vault on Pandora just waiting to be found. And that's what your characters are here to do as the new vault hunters. Liberate the planet from Jack and find the bigger vault.
And it's great because you literally start off and you wake up and he just starts talking to you and he's like, okay, I can't really be bothered to come down there and kill you. So if you could just kill yourself, that would save me a lot of trouble. And he just spends like the first half an hour trying to make you kill yourself, like, just by talking to you over the phone for no reason. It's really good. Reminds me a lot of Pagan Min from Far Cry 4. It's that kind of relationship that you have with Handsome Jack where you don't really ever see him. You just... hear from him via walkie-talkie every so often. It's pretty cool.
Pretty nice, yeah. The fact they introduce him really early and you keep talking to him. So, a bit about the world itself. It's broken down into a huge number of areas. I think there's like 20 or maybe even 30 in total, ranging from desert to this Arctic tundra, which I guess where you start in all the Arctic lands. And then there's loads of caverns and grasslands and desert and all sorts of places that you can go and visit. And they're all leveled. So the creatures that you find there, if you're too low level, will be badass and kick your ass. So you should probably turn away from there and come back later. But you don't have to, which is nice. And it opens up not linearly, really. You can kind of pick roughly a different direction to go after a certain point. So that's pretty nice. And the world is also full of probably more than 20 or 30 core types of bad guys and then variants on them, like, you know, elite types and things. And they're level 2. So there might be bandits that go from level 2 to 20. And then there's these things called Blimongs, which are like big ape-type creatures. Lots of psychos running around that blow themselves up when they run up to you. Skags, the kind of wasteland, I guess almost like tiger-type things, but a bit more insect-like. And then Jack's mechanical army, which is helping him rule the planet. So there's a lot of shit to kill, a lot of places to go, a lot of quests to do. I think the main point I want to get across here, there's a plot. It's pretty interesting.
It's a good plot. To be fair, it has a lot of twists and turns in it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people from the first game. I mean, I didn't know them when they turned up. They'd turn up and you'd go, oh, she was in the first game. I go, oh, okay, great. I have no idea of the relationship here. And then when I finally went back and played the first game, I realized, because I got to play as those characters. And so it's kind of cool how they brought the people back from the first game without being like you're playing as them again or anything. They're just there.
Yeah.
And they I really like you that. And give you missions. And I really like the not just the areas that you can go to, but also the city settings. So there's I forget what the place is called. It's got a name that is just constantly reused in like so many games and places. It's called something like Salvation or Utopia or something like that. But it's pretty cool because you go in there and then there's like your typical RPG, people with quest markers over their heads and shops. There's loads of places to go and interesting things to find. And I really enjoyed all of our time at that hub world because there was so much interesting stuff to find and lots of achievements there. And Moxie was there as well. So that's a damn good reason to...
You spent a lot of your time with Moxie's bar, didn't you, Ben?
I spent a lot of time. Gave her a lot of tips. So I get to talk a little bit about the DLC. Now, we didn't play all of it because there is a considerable amount, to be fair. I mentioned the Necromancer and the Psycho characters that you get as part of the DLC. But each of them also came with story packs. So you had Captain Scarlet and her Pirate's Booty, which is like a whole new area in like a wasteland desert that you went to, which I didn't really enjoy that much. I thought it dragged on a bit too much and there was too much slow travelling around.
You seem to think it was all right. It was all right. I wasn't enamored with it, but it was just a bit more content, fun, running around shooting things. But yeah, it wasn't I wouldn't rush out to get it if I was replaying the game.
No, and then there were two more that we didn't play, which were Mr. Torg's Campaign of Carnage and Sir Hammerlock's Big Game Hunt, which we should probably go back and play at some point because they sound good.
I think the Big Game Hunt added a bunch of... I think we did a few of them not even without even realizing it.
But here yes,
be like,
we did.
Oh, go and kill 20 of these things, and then you kill 20, and it's like that would unlock something else. So it wasn't like a solid quest chain like the other two. There's two that have a really strong quest line, but this was lots of little missions, I think. So.
No, I think you're right. But then there is the last one, which I would say is probably one of the finest pieces of DLC made for any game ever, which is Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragon Keep. Essentially, Tiny Tina is like, she's very much like Louise from Bob's Burgers, if you've ever seen that. She's like this mad little genius child who's a little bit unhinged. And the story for that particular piece of DLC is that she's running a game of Dungeons and Dragons, essentially, with all of the other like vault hunters. So you've got all these people, and there's like the guy with his big gun who's like just like going, "Oh, Tina, I don't want to play." And so then you get dropped in, but then the game is that you are actually playing it in first person as if it is just Borderlands stuff, but it's all themed. So you've got like all castles that you go around, and there was a lot of detail, the things like chests that you open, instead of being like the fairly modern looking crates
boxes
and things,
they're now like
treasure chests and stuff. I think the currency was slightly different that you collected, and sound effects. It was like a really good,
and the bad guys obviously skeletons and stuff.
Yeah,
and it was massive, wasn't it?
It was huge. It was probably about 10 hours long, I would say.
I remember us thinking, this has got to be like a novelty that's going to last 2 hours or something, because it's so
it really
different.
Was not.
It went on for like 10. That was awesome.
So many different areas. Like it was way more than like a basic reskin. It was a lot of effort, and it was hilariously funny. Like the first like 5 minutes, like a level 50 dragon turns up. you're just getting your ass handed to you by this massive dragon that you have no hope of possibly killing. And then like you just hear the characters speaking to Tina going, "Tina, you can't just put a dragon in at the first part." And she just goes, okay, it's not a dragon. Plot twist! And then the dragon just disappears. And then there's a skeleton. She goes, "It's a skeleton, and it's called Mr. Bony Pants." And then literally, it's got like a little label and a health bar under it. It's like, "Mr. Bony Pants, level 10. He's just coming towards you. It was great. It was really funny.
Yeah, really clever.
And that carried on like throughout. It was a great piece of DLC. But then also alongside the DLC, there's like a million cosmetic items and weapons. And it's very much a game that's numbers driven, and not so much, not only, I should say, in terms of like stats going up by like, "Oh, here's a boost of 0.05% for this stat." But like, it's just so many weapons and different types. They did a really good job of making sort of loads of different models and having enough detail that changes between each one that every weapon looks unique without actually... I mean, it's just the same as all the others, but just maybe slightly different stats. And so they added even more in the DLC. So now it's just a massive game. There's so many items to pick up.
One thing you mentioned there, which we really should talk about, is the weapon generation system, and that's really cool. So it's... I guess there's a bunch of base types of weapons, like there's the shotgun, the pistol, the SMG, the sniper rifle. But then not only are they completely randomized, one of the selling points of the game, right, is like a bazillion guns, because they've randomized so many different components, and when you multiply all the possibilities together, there's millions. But they, not just the numbers, not just like the accuracy and the reload time, but also the mechanically, they're mechanically different. So you might have a sniper rifle that shoots explosive bullets, or a rocket launcher that shoots 7 rockets at a time, or 3 or 5, and in a certain pattern with a certain delay between them, or they might curve around or go around in a spiral, or you can unload your entire shotgun with one click. But obviously, that was really nice, because it wasn't just like, "Oh, there's 7 different weapons with different damage range and this, that, the other." You actually felt like there were, obviously not a bazillion different feeling weapons, but it did feel like there were an awful lot of different mechanics to play with, and that was really cool.
Sometimes, and the nice thing about that as well is I like the way that the name changed as well. So the names were also cleverly linked to certain skills. So if you had like an explosive rocket that shoots 3 rockets at a time, it'd have like a funny name that sort of played on that fact. So even without knowing what the stats were, you could generally like read the name and sort of get an idea of what it was going to be. But they were always random. So sometimes you'd see like the same adjectives turn up a load of times. But even so, it was kind of clever that it wasn't just the gun and the look of it and the numbers that were randomly generated, but also the name itself, which I thought was pretty clever.
And they made a really interesting choice, which was also really good, is they had certain brands of guns and they ran with a theme. So there was like the TDR guns and Imperium guns. And they would generally have like a special ability. So one of them would be, when you've emptied your clip, you actually throw your gun at them and then it explodes and does a bit of damage. And certain guns might, be more likely to be explosive or have other abilities. And that was really cool, because it kept a strong world theme while also randomizing a lot of properties of the guns. So You got to learn the names.
Did you get a benefit if you had all of your weapons by the same manufacturer? Or maybe that was an achievement. I forget. I thought there was some benefit if you had like all of your weapons from the same company. Like it might have been like just plus 5% damage or something silly like that. But there was definitely a strong tie to the brand names of each weapon. And there was like a load of lore as well. Like you could go in and read like the history of all of these different companies that make all these weapons. So it was there's a huge amount of detail there.
Yeah, and it kept the theme strong, which I really liked. A couple other random bits, really, that we should mention, but not dwell too long on, I guess. There was the badass points, which just added a bit more customization to the game. So you have little mini challenges that you could do. Kill 10 bullymongs, kill 10 psychos with grenades, run 100 meters in 3 seconds. I can't remember what they all were. And every time you did one of those things, you unlocked the badass point. And then you could spend that on... It was random. There was a list of maybe 30 things, and it would randomly pick 5 that you could spend your points on. And it would be, have 0.07% more health or 0.2% more speed. So you'd have to spend a lot of these points. But it was still cool, because it felt like you, after a while, and you spent 10 badass points on something, it was plus 4% health or something. It's like, yeah, that's significant, you know? Not game-breaking, but... enough to make a difference. And then there were these golden keys, and I was never quite sure where I got them from, but I think because I bought Borderlands 2 really early, but just after it came out on the Xbox 360, I played about 10 hours, and then I actually didn't play it much, so I sold it while it still had some value. I thought, I'll get this again later when I got time to play it. And then we came back and we played it 3 years later on the Xbox One, and it's all tied to like a Shift account, they call it. And you can get these codes online, and you type in a code, and it gives you a golden key. And then you go into the game in the main city, Sanctuary, that's what it's called.
Sanctuary, that's the one.
You go back to Sanctuary, and you'd find this chest, and you could use the golden key, and you always got like a very powerful item. It was still randomized, but it was always a very like rare item, so it was very good. But when we started, I had about 60 of these keys.
Yeah.
So it was kind of nice that we could... There were always these items you got, maybe there were like 5 levels above your current level. So we didn't spaff all the keys early on, but it meant that every now and then when we felt we hadn't got much good loot, we could just, I'd give you like 3 or 4 keys and I'd keep 3 or 4 keys, right? And then we would just open some chests and get some nice loot. So
the start of each session that we played, and we'd probably play like 3 or 4 hours a session, we would generally go to Sanctuary, spend the keys and get some weapons, and then go and play for a while. And then repeat the next week or whatever it was. But it was good because I guess we didn't mention with the weapons that they had different rarity values. So they would either be like green, which was like common, blue, which was like slightly rare, and then there was purple, which was like super rare. And the golden keys nearly always gave you purple weapons. And the purple ones are not only rare because they've got, you know, they're slightly better, they're slightly higher than your current level, but also they would have like some special ability attached to them. So you had to kind of be a bit careful with it as well, because quite often we'd use the golden key and it'd be like, here's a pistol, and it's 2 levels above the one that you are, so you can't use it, and then you'd have to wait. So we'd typically do it at the start of a session so that 2 hours in we'd finally be able to actually use it and be like, yay, now I can use this cool weapon that I've just found a better one of in this toilet. So
there's one more mechanic I can think of worth mentioning, and that was the, was it called Illyrium? And super rare. I guess another currency, really. Like a super rare currency you would find, and these little purple bits of ore or stone, gemstones kind of things. And every time you picked enough of them up, you could go to that dodgy guy who hid behind his door, right?
Yeah, all you saw was his eyes through a little slit in the door. You'd just open it and go, what, you got some Illyrium to sell?
And you'd hand him like 4 or 8 item pieces of Illyrium, and it would make your inventory slightly bigger or give you more space for ammo for certain types of guns.
And it's stacked. So if you wanted inventory space, it might cost 10 Illyrium. But the next time you wanted inventory space, it'd be 20.
Yeah.
And so you had to kind of choose what you wanted to upgrade, whether you wanted to sort of split the difference and go, okay, well, I want a bit more ammo, a bit more grenades, a bit more inventory space. Or like me, I just went, give me loads of grenades. And then I just had like 20 grenades or something. And I could just run around just chucking them constantly because I didn't really have to worry about it. So that was really cool. But it was also nice, the mechanic of spending it. Like, I liked the fact that you had to go to that really sketchy guy, like, down that side street, and just this little hatch would open. But I think we also got a load of Illyrium from the Golden Key system. I think you started with a load of Illyrium.
I think so.
And I got half of it automatically somehow. I don't remember
somehow how magically,
it
yeah.
It's all a bit strange. But we should probably, because we've been talking about it for about 25 minutes now. We've not actually mentioned anything about specifically how it plays cooperatively differently to single player or how the multiplayer works. So perhaps you would like to discuss that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the pure joys of this game, really. And I think the reason why it's still on my hard drive and not been deleted was the fact you could just play the whole game together. I mean, you must... If you're a regular listener here, you know how much we value that. No special sub mode or anything. You can just fire up the game right from the start. I think like right on the bus, basically, right? You know, you both pick your character.
Yep.
And you come off.
The story was
written
for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like Halo where it's a single player story and you can play it through as two people, but every cutscene there's just one of you and it breaks it. You were genuinely in the story, the both of you, I seem to think. It's a while, but I'm pretty sure that was the case, and like you would be addressed as Vault Hunters, the pair of you, rather than like if you played it single player, you'd be referred to as Vault Hunter. So it's just a very tiny change, but that's all that was needed because, of course, there'd be two of you. It makes sense in the story that there would be multiple Vault Hunters that are there that Handsome Jack's trying to kill. So it just fits perfectly.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I guess really you've got two different ways you can play it. You can start together and just keep playing through the game together, which we did, and I really rate that experience. But it's also possible, I think they do some funky balancing to make it more fair, but you can drop into someone else's game. So if someone's having a trouble with a boss and you're 30 levels ahead, you can drop in and give them a hand. 1-4 players, which is kind of cool. You can play the whole game on your own. I played 10 or 15 hours and it was still fun, but a lot more fun with a friend. And what's really cool is on Xbox One and PS4, you can play local split screen up to 4 players. So if you've got a 70-inch TV, and don't mind sharing, which I do, but you could play it with your friends. And what was even cooler was I saw some people on Steam who, if you had 2 monitors on your PC, you could actually fire up 2 instances of the game with special command line parameters, so they use different like directories for the save files and things, and actually play them side by side and use one controller for one and one controller for the other. So there's there's videos of people playing split screen, i.e. one monitor each, 2 player Borderlands on the same PC with different controllers, and that was pretty cool. I guess
That's old enough now
that most PCs can handle it too. So
we should do that next time we're in the same room together.
Yeah, we could do that. For the geekiness.
Yeah. Although, you know, if I had a 70-inch screen and I could play this game, I'd play it solo because you'd want Moxie on 70-inch screen. You're not going to want to condense that down to a tiny little window. It's about Moxie. One thing I really loved about the multiplayer being that it is drop-in, drop-out, is at one point, I think I'll probably mention it a little later on, we got to a stage, and I don't know how it happened, but basically John was a little bit more powerful than me, and his guns were a bit better, because he'd, like... I think we must have gone our separate ways at some point, and so you had found a load of enemies and killed them and leveled up, and I just wasn't close enough to get the benefit of it. I seem to think that you need to be within a certain radius of your co-op partner for you to get the shared XP, otherwise just them gets it.
It's like 300 meters of a kill or something, and you would get the XP as well.
And as I was a sniper, quite often I would hang back and shoot long range, so sometimes I didn't get the XP. And so it'd gone on for a while. It was fine at first, but I think at some point I was like 2 levels down maybe, and it was like having a noticeable effect. And so I wanted to get a few achievements as well, because I'm an achievement fan like that. And so one evening... when John couldn't make it, I just played on my own for a little bit and just did a few little tiny side quests that weren't really that important that we probably wouldn't have bothered playing anyway. And I got some XP that way and was able to level up a bit and get a few achievements. And then when we played again, it was fine because we were the same level again and it was great. But it was nice that you could still drop in, drop out. And also, if you wanted to, you can, like the save game system didn't just allow you to play once. You could have a multiplayer game on the go whilst also having a single player game if you wanted to.
Yeah, you could have multiple characters, right?
Yeah, a lot of games don't do that, which is incredibly infuriating. so that was my point on that. My player's good. So I guess we're going to get to our likes, dislikes, and comments on the game. So I'll start with my like, which we've discussed it quite a lot already, so I'll gloss over it quickly. But the weapon variety was great because it really did make it feel very fresh as you were going along. Like you were constantly looking forward to the next weapon you were going to get and then go through it. In many ways, it's kind of similar to like Zelda Breath of the Wild, in that it's very much that kind of open world game where you can go and do what you want, although there is a story running through, but also in the way that weapons, in this they don't break, but they do, you do just get rid of them because you want the next thing that comes along.
Yeah, they get crap after a while because other ones are better, right?
Yeah, you're constantly picking up new weapons, and because there's all the different weapon types, like you've got your shotgun things, you've got different ammo for each gun as well, which is infuriating in some ways, but you will go along and like, if you've got your sniper rifle and then you run out of sniper ammo, it's like, well, shit, I've got to use a different gun now, but luckily there's hundreds of them lying around. So, I mean, you could carry multiple weapons, so you would just switch to a shotgun or switch to something else, but it was very easy if you had multiples of certain weapons, you could just switch out and go and get something new. So I like that. There's not enough games that have this amount of weaponry in it. It's good.
That's a very interesting definition of, I'll just gloss over it, you've got there, Ben.
Yeah. Sit back while I really tell you a tale.
This one. I really will just gloss over this one because we mentioned it, but the whole game being available in co-op is awesome. That's the one of my biggest likes.
Nice, we'll move on. you can expand on that if you wish.
We talked about it quite a lot, so I think there is nothing more to say. It's awesome. Play it together with your friends, the whole game. Done.
I did already mention it, but I'm going to mention it again because I loved it so much. Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragon Keep is definitely the best DLC I've ever played. And it was like, I would have bought that as a standalone game and I would have paid £15-20 for it. It was that good.
Yeah, it was perfect because it builds on the experience you've built already in the game. Like, it works so well because when like they're playing D&D and there's a hero that you've seen go through the wars telling Tiny Tina to shut up, and then Tiny Tina's like, no, you're playing my game. And then everyone's just like, all right, we'll have to do what she says. Like, it works because they built the characters up, so it's really good. Even better than
there's also like
standalone.
Recurring characters would like come along as enemies in the game, wouldn't they? Like, there was there's some guy in the game who dies and like she has a hard time dealing with it. And so then in Tiny Tina's Assault, he's in it. And he's just like there as like a shining knight who's amazing. And like you can hear the others being like, she really needs to get over this. How can we move her on? And she's like, it's fine. And just like constantly playing. And he's like this fucking angel that's just like got wings and stuff. But he's like super powered. It's like tragic and hilarious at the same time. It's like it's got quite a lot of depth to it that you wouldn't expect from what looks like. It kind of looks like the throwaway sort of DLC that you would expect to get, but it's actually more like Red Dead Redemption had really good DLC when it had that zombie mode, which I mean everyone's done that to death now, but they were like the first one to do it properly, and that had a whole story where like everyone was undead suddenly, and it's very much like that it's not just a simple reskin, it's like a huge amount of effort has gone into it and a huge amount of new voice acting and graphical assets and stuff. It's not like Sunset Overdrive's DLC where it's like, oh, you're somewhere slightly different and the enemies have got a new color palette.
Yeah.
But it's more of
the
same.
Awesome, but it was nowhere near as good as this.
No, this is like a different league.
I wanted to tip my hat to the characters and the overall writing of the game. I think it was really strong.
Which character in particular, John?
Well, there was that little robot called Claptrap. He was pretty cool. And there was that bad guy called Handsome Jack. He was really funny. I love the interplay between you and him because he had this cocky, hey, I'm the bad guy. Will you just die for me, please?
Yeah,
and then who else was there? There was, there was Moxie, who owns the bar.
Moxie's
just
bar.
Just for you, Ben. Just for you. And you could tip her like 100, 1,000, or 10,000, right?
Yeah. And she'd just give you a little like throwaway line that would always be like disparaging. Like you'd give her 10,000, she'd be like, I don't know what you think you're getting for that, but I can tell you, you're not.
I know what you wanted, Ben.
You get the same whiskey as everyone else.
But I thought it was also great that the characters from the original game were in there, and that was really nice because it made the continuity from the first game fit together really well. But you didn't play the characters in the first, so you got to see them and how they'd grown and what they'd become. And that was really cool. Like when you saw them for the first time, like, oh yeah, I remember those characters because I played them. And then obviously Tina, I mean, she comes in with Tina's the DLC, great. But she's also an awesome character. And the writing is just really fun. Whenever someone opens their mouth, it's usually something funny or interesting comes out. So you want to listen to it.
Yeah, it's definitely not press X to skip territory. No. It's, it's reminded me, one of the nice things about this is that apparently, like during development, there was someone who was like a super fan of like the first game, and then he'd been like diagnosed with I forget what type of cancer or whatever it was, but something terrible had happened, and he was like really looking forward to this game, but obviously wasn't going to make it. And I think his brother or someone, I'm getting all the details wrong here, basically wrote to Gearbox and said, "Oh, please, can you do something and let him see it?" And they basically gave him an early copy of the game and let him play it and finish it, and then. Once the game was released and he'd died, they put him into the game, and there was an achievement if you found him. And it was ridiculously hard because I spent like 2 hours trying to get it. But basically, you just had to keep going into Sanctuary because there was like a 1 in 1,000 chance that he would be at one of 18 spots in Sanctuary. And like he could just be like leaning against an alleyway or thing. So basically you would leave Sanctuary, go back in, and then you would go to all 18 places he could be. He wasn't there. You'd leave, you'd go back in, repeat. And I did that for 2 hours, and then I finally found him in Moxie's bar, and he was sat there. And then he says a few lines, which are quite nice. And then he gives you a ridiculously powerful weapon and an achievement. Huh. And I was like, ah, oh, it's one of the best achievements I've ever got because it's got such a great story behind it.
Yeah.
And it was also
really nice.
Typical of achievement. It was a horrendous grind. Particularly because originally, I think in the first year the game came out, it was quite easy to do. And then they made it ridiculously difficult with a patch. And so, like, on all the forums and stuff, it's like, it's easy, just leave like 10 times and you'll find him, he'll be by the fountain. It's like, no, it's not anymore. But no, it's really good, really. I like things like that, and that's it's nice when developers do stuff like that. I like appreciate
nice
their fans
and connect with the community.
Like, so other likes, just the huge amount of quests and side quests, and they're all interesting. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, the usual sort of fetch and carry type of stuff. There's a lot of going into an area and clearing it out of enemies, that kind of thing. But it always felt fun because there was always colourful characters involved in it. So I remember there was one for the mechanic where we had to like go out into the desert in a vehicle and like blow up 20 psycho caravans to get her parts that she needed. And that was great.
Yeah,
she's just like talking to you through the headset and just like giving you words of encouragement. She was very much like Pam from Archer. In fact, actually, Archer's a good comparison in terms of the graphical style. If you've ever watched Archer, it's that kind of cell shading
and almost that kind of tongue-in-cheek delivery.
It's very, very similar. Yeah, lot of similarity there. But yeah, the quests are great, really good.
And I bring this up often when a game has it because it's one of my favourite features of a game, but it has huge amounts of variety, not just the weapons and the world, but the variety in being able to build your characters. So the classes did feel very different, which was nice. Their abilities stood out as different. and they had really deep skill trees, and you could never buy, well, I don't know about never, but we were nowhere near buying all the skills when we were done with 50 hours of gameplay. So, I mean, you ended up with a character you had built, not just the final stage character, which you always build. And that was nice, because you could probably play the game through. I probably wouldn't play it through as the same class again, because why? But at least when you get to the end, you feel like you've built your character with your blend of badass points and your blend of skills and weapons. So,
and with six different characters to play as and lots of different side quests and stuff, like you could quite easily play the game three times and have quite a different experience, I reckon.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's also worth mentioning that you can respec your character as well at Sanctuary. There's like a vending machine you can go into and respec for a certain amount of money, which isn't very expensive, so you can just reset all your points and respec, which is always good because it's such a pain when you don't have that in a game, and it's really frustrating when you've made a bad decision early on and now you can't get that ability that you really wanted. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm sure I had something to say about the massive variety. I got what it was. It'll come to me. So dislikes. I didn't like the first DLC, the Captain Scarlet and her Pirate's Booty. Like, maybe it's because we played it straight after playing Borderlands 2, like the full game. So we played it for like 40 hours or something and then started playing that, and I was a bit sick of it by then, maybe. But then I say that, but then we finished that and then played Tiny Tina's Assault, and I was like fully into it at that point because that was so different. So I think it was probably too similar that it just felt like a little bit more. Like, we sort of rushed through the last part of the game, like not doing as many side quests because we just wanted to finish it, and that felt we were going back and doing a side quest. Like, it probably is fine, like, if you finish the game and then 3 months later they release that DLC and you're like, oh, cool, a bit more of that game I loved. But now it's a bit more like, it was there, it was all right. I didn't think it was great, though.
Yeah, by the end of the game, at that time, we were done, right? And then we just tried Tiny Tina, and it felt like a different game, so it was a different thing. But the core mechanics were kind of done. And I agree. I thought it was just more of the same, which wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but wouldn't have gripped me if that was all there was. I think we'd have stopped playing for now. You know, we might have gone back to it. But my first dislike is the... And this is a bit of a double-edged sword, because I liked the leveling mechanic, but it did mean that sometimes you would go into an area, especially early on, when you were level 3 and you met some level 5 guys, and you lined up the perfect headshot, and you're like, yeah, in the face. And then their health bar goes down 5%. You're like, huh.
Yeah.
And it's a byproduct of having leveled weapons, leveled bad guys, you know. But it did remove a bit of the badassery when you're like, I'm going to shoot you in the head with a rocket, 3% damage. Oh, for fuck's sake. And then you have to shoot it 25 times. And then obviously at high levels, you can shoot anything in anywhere in their body and they die with one shot if you're over their level. So I don't know what the solution is to that, because I did like the leveling system and progression. Sometimes it was a bit like grinding through guys because they're a couple of levels too high. I don't want to go and get another quest because let's just finish it. But they're too high level, so bang, bang, bang. So
it was grindy. And speaking of grindy, inventory management is just, I mean, again, it's a double-edged sword, because we're going, oh, we love how there's so many weapons and so much variety. But then the flip side of that is that you have to manage all of that. And so you pick up a weapon and then you're walking through an area and you're like, boom, 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 blowing stuff up. This is so cool. And then, oh, weapons, pick that up. Is this better than the weapon I have? Let me just look at the stats. Compare. What's the button for compare? Oh, no, shit, that's the button for back. Better go back. Oh, yeah, compare. Okay, so that one's got 0.2% faster reload, but this one's got one extra bullet in its chamber. And it's just constant that all the time. And then even worse is that you have to do that not for just one weapon, but eventually you've got like four. And so you're looking and going, is that sniper rifle better than my sniper rifle? Have I used that? Oh no, I'm saving that one because I know I've got to use that at a higher level, but I want to keep it. And you've just got loads of guns in your inventory that you're juggling around, but you don't know if you want to sell them because you might need that for a certain enemy type. So like, I had a acid sniper rifle because it was super effective on one particular enemy that had been massive in one area, And so I kept it just in case we ever went back there. But it was taking up a slot in my inventory and it wasn't that powerful. It was just powerful against that one enemy type. And it's like, oh, I hate all of this management. But then to make it worse, in co-op, it's much worse because all of the inventory is shared, like on the ground. So if an enemy drops, if they dropped cash, that went to both of us automatically. Yeah. And XP goes to both of you automatically if you're nearby. But guns and stuff like that, shields, relics, whatever they're called, they got dropped on the floor, and so it's whoever picks it up. So then you get to a situation where you find a stash of stuff and you go, okay, sniper rifle, well, I should probably take that. But that rocket launcher also looks good. John, what's your stats on your rocket launcher? And then he'd rattle off all his stats, and then I'd look at it and go, is this better? I don't think this is much better. And then he'd look at it and go, ah. no. And then I'll be like, well, do you want to take it? Then you can sell it at the shop and you get some money for it. He's like, I don't know, but I sold the last one. He's like, oh my God, let's just play Rocket League. It's just, you know, just constant inventory management, which is, yeah. I mean, it's always one of our bugbears. Like, because we love games like this. We play a lot of things like, you know, Torchlight and Neverwinter Nights, and all these things have these problems, but it just seemed more prevalent in this because there's so much.
Yeah, I agree. So my last dislike was just the fact that you start with only two weapon slots. You find a lot of weapons early on, and as you get through, you finally get your third and your fourth weapon slot quite late into the game, like 5 hours or something. Just start me off with four. I mean, I say weapon slots, your inventory can carry 12 or 15, but you obviously have one per direction on the D-pad. And I just wish they started you off with more than two. It's an unnecessary, I can handle it, you know, like I'm a gamer, I've played games before. I can handle four weapon slots. You don't have to hold it back. And then you're constantly going into your inventory and switching weapons over early on, unnecessarily. So I just,
and then
little gripe.
Running out of ammo for different weapon types as well. Total pain. If you want to play as a sniper and you can only hold one sniper rifle at a time, and then you run out of sniper ammo, it's really annoying. So just a few comments. Lots of great achievements. As someone that likes achievement hunting, I very much enjoyed the large mixture of story-based achievements and just silly, stupid stuff that you do in the open world that gets you achievements. I really like it when a game... For me, an achievement should be something that makes you do something in the game that you wouldn't otherwise have done.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of that. It's not just, oh, replay the game with this character. Oh, collect 100 weapons. There's a lot more crazy stuff in there, which I really enjoyed.
You are such a chivo whore, aren't you?
I really am. There was a great one where it was like meet Stabby McStabface, and there was a psycho. He's like, I'm Stabby McStabface, stab me in the face, and you literally just had to stab him in the face, and he died. And then it's like achievement unlocked. It's like, what?
Brilliant. So random. I love it. But so my last comment was just going to be that not really a dislike, because maybe it is our own fault for skipping a bunch of side quests near the end, but there were a few times where we were obviously in somewhere that was overpowered. But it kind of took us by surprise, I guess, because you went through 2/3 of a quest and only then did you realize you weren't quite high enough level for the boss. And we ended up dying like 20 times on some bits, didn't we? And it did warn us, this level is for level 25 and you're only 23. But a lot of the time that happened and it was fine. So, you know, this will be fine too, I'm sure. And you get through most of the quest and then the last bit is like,
I'm conscious of time, but one thing that we didn't mention, which I love, is that when you die, you don't die. Well, you do die, but your soul is saved in like an SD card. And then that goes to the nearest Hyperion, like retransplant center or something like that. I forget what it's called, and you get respawned and it takes your money. Basically it takes like a chunk of money for the cost of giving you a new body. But the little phrases that she would come out with as she reformed you were hilarious. It takes about 10 seconds, and the reason I mention it is because when there's a boss fight, that's always like within about 30 seconds walk of it. So if there's two of you, you'll be shooting at the boss and one of you dies. They basically have to keep fighting for about 45 seconds while you respawn and then run back across. But
And try not to kill them. Otherwise, only one of you gets the XP. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that happened a few times. All right. So would we play it again and would we recommend it? John?
Yes, I definitely would play it again. In fact, we started recently and I think if there weren't so many other great games, we'd probably be playing it now. But we're addicted to Rocket League at the moment. But I'd be up for another run through, if only to get to Tiny Tina's Keep again. And I would definitely recommend it. I mean, it's on offer so often, I probably wouldn't recommend going out and spending €45 on it tomorrow. But no. Wait till the summer sale, wait till the next this sale, that sale. It's always on offer now because it's so old, but it's still worth buying. Really good.
Yeah, I would say the same. And I would also say, I mean, I started playing Borderlands with Borderlands 2. And then I liked it so much, I bought Borderlands 1 on the Xbox 360 as a disc because it was so cheap. It's like £6. And then I put it into my Xbox One and then it downloaded the full game and let me play it. And it's like, oh, that's pretty awesome. And I played through the first game and then we played some of the pre-sequel, which is the newest one of the games.
Yeah.
We didn't finish it, but I think we were a bit bored of Borderlands by that point. Borderlands. Hey. I think we'll wrap it up there. We're done. So thank you very much for listening. The website is connectingtohost.co.uk if you want to listen to some of our previous episodes. You can chat to us on Twitter at CTHcast and recommend some games for us to play. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave an iTunes review. But until next time, thank you very much for listening.